The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say, particularly today because it's an open line, so whatever you want to talk about, by all means. Do get in touch, call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com. Maybe you'd like to follow up on what the Department of Infrastructure Minister was saying yesterday. Michelle Haywood was talking, well, she talked about many things, the state of the roads, about the airport, about the Liverpool landing stage. It just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? It's a very, very big department. I just want to put some news before you, which has literally just arrived in, and it concerns Manx Care and the Department of Health and Social Care. An independent report which was commissioned from the Mersey Internal Audit Agency. An independent report found out that the current health and social care model in the Isle of Man, quote, is not operating as well as originally intended, end quote. The report has found the size and scale of the Isle of Man, along with its governance and funding structures, have limited the ability of Manx Care to fully function as an independent arm's-length body. The Mersey Internal Audit Agency has outlined four strategic options to try to rectify the issues. The full implementation of the Sir Jonathan Michael Independent Review recommendations, strengthening the partnership between Manx Care and the DHSC, do nothing or scrap Manx Care. The latter two, doing nothing and scrapping Manx Care, apparently are seen as not viable. We'll get more on this as the day goes on. You can also find the detail at manxradio.com. But that's literally just broken. This report says, apparently, that the current health and social care model in the Isle of Man is not operating as well as originally intended. Let's get to the phones now, and Chris is with us first now. Hi, Chris.
Andy, good morning to you. This my call really follows up the meeting of the first big meeting of the local economy forum last night, very well attended, where the forum, the panel, put forward its proposal to result in a better outcome for or with regard to the minimum wage. I think the government's determination seems to be to focus on the gross top line pay. What they don't talk about is the tax grab, the national insurance and tax grab that follows that process, the result of which is that the employee doesn't get anything remotely close to what they might perhaps think that they would get on what is a 10% increase on the top line. Now, the proposal we put forward last night, which was well received, was adjusting the proposal such that the employee gets more than they would under the current proposals. And I'm pretty sure in my own mind that when Tim Walz voted for this, they didn't understand that they were voting for a tax grab. And I don't think for a second they intended to vote for something where the Treasury is applying a tax grab through the lowest paid, directed at the small and medium-sized businesses in particular. Frankly, Andy, it's a downright mess, and we made that clear last night, and we're circulating all the members of Timworld, asking them to reconsider, because our proposal, believe it or not, actually complies in the delivery, the take-home pay rate, with the living wage. In other words, we are helping government deliver its ambition in a lot more sophisticated way than the Timwell voted for its clumsy tax grab.
Right. I mean, is this just the law of unintended consequences, Chris, or do you think they actually knew that this was going to happen?
Well, I think that the Treasury Minister indicated some weeks ago in public that this wasn't a tax grab. So I think they were well aware of how much money they would be getting out of this. Remember, when we spoke last time about this a few days ago, or a week or so ago, I said to you that the insurance and tax take from the lowest paid by the Treasury has gone up from the beginning of this administration at 8% up to 14 to 15%. Now, this won't do. I mean, even in the UK, Andy, the government is much more careful with regards to thresholds related to the lowest paid. For example, just, I don't want to throw numbers and things at you too much on over the radio, but in the Isle of Man, the employee pays 11% NI, and the UK equivalent pays 8%. But the important point to also note here is that in the UK, they don't start paying, the employee doesn't start paying national insurance at 8% until they get to £12,570. In the Isle of Man, the Treasury starts hammering the lowest paid at 11% from £8,736. It really won't do. And the forum, the local economy forum, is as keen as mustard to make sure that the staff members of their various businesses gain as much as possible from this. What we're actually seeing, in summary, is a bloated government organisation that has failed to address efficiency and productivity issues over the whole of this and the previous House, whilst small businesses on the Isle of Man throughout that period have been struggling to improve their insurance and productivity. And when government can't do their job, they reach out to the private sector, to small businesses, and demand the money. It really is very, very poor. Now, to answer specifically your question, did they realise what they were doing? Yes, I think they did. But their thinking, frankly, here is really poor. And our proposal, and I do hope that it's taken seriously, delivers for the government, in the end, the living wage, in net terms, in other words, money in your pocket. It doesn't impact as hard on businesses, and it benefits the low paid. So, you know, what's not to like about what we're proposing? And yet all we've heard this morning is, oh, well, we're going to stick to the gross pay figure. And there's a form of gaslighting there. The public is being gaslighted, and it's not as it appears. So we're going to keep on with this subject.
What was the mood of the meeting like, Chris?
Well, we asked for a vote of hands to support the proposal that I've just been discussing with you now. I've sent a copy of it all to your news desk, so if you want to consider it yourself in more detail, you'll see where we're coming from. But it was as near as unanimous support for the proposals, as I say, because we called it the win-win situation. Everybody wins and nobody loses. Unless, of course, Treasury's aim is just this awful tax grab.
Okay. Chris, we appreciate it. Thanks for the numbers as well. As many numbers as possible, we can take them. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's get to Howard with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just listened to your programme yesterday with Michelle Haywood, and the chap come on, and he was went to give her down the banks regarding the road from the bottom of the Brown Cow Hill down through Ferrybridge. Now, I was just saying to Chris, that was refurbished from the top of the Richmond all the way through, rebuilt in the 1970s. And I can say this because I was driving a wagon taking the spoil away. It went down to Ballyhot Tip down there at by Rushen Abbey. But that was stopped to where it is now because they knew about the troubles on the way down through the water ingress and the railway bridge. So we're talking 50 years that road has been left and deteriorating. So it's not a new thing. I know that chap, I don't know how long he's been here or he's lived here, but he talked about it being 20-something years, but it's over 50 years, which if you work it out, is 10 of our governments.
Yeah.
So none of them, anywhere in the system of the governments over the last 10 years, have stood up and said that needs to be done.
But I mean, Howard, that is an essential route, isn't it?
It's an arterial route. There's nothing, that can be done without that, because the Mullaghcoyne Bridge down there has a weight limit on it. That's the one where you come up around that sharp bend and you come back up to the blackboard.
Yeah.
The Mullaghcoyne Bridge. Now, I can remember in the days of the coaches, they used to go down there. Well, they were stopped because the coaches were overweight for that bridge. And I know one chap used to get all his passengers to get off, walk over the bridge, and he'd pick them up on the other side, because the actual coach physically, structurally, was under the weight of the bridge, but with the people on, it was over. And that was just one of his amusing parts that he would do if he'd done a mystery trip down there. Anyway, 1970s, that road was being reconstructed all the way down through, down to where you turned up to the Santon School. And from that point onwards, it was deliberately left. I know that because, as I say, I asked about it. Are we going to go right the way down through? Oh, no. We can't do anything there because of the railway bridge, and it needs major work before we can go down any further. So it's not a new thing. So why are the highway board as it was then, the DOI, infrastructure, whatever they want to call themselves, and the politicians all been sitting on their hands for an arterial route, a very vital route to go to the south of the island?
Well, it sounds like it's a can that's been kicked down the road for nearly 50 years, Howard.
Yep, exactly. That is exactly what it is. They've looked at it and put it in the out tray for the time being. It was concealed and put in, and just hoping the Joe public wouldn't notice. And that road, as I say, I've known it, bumps, humps and lumps, and you come off a nice smooth road. That piece from the ferry bridge to the blackboards, that was the first of that type of tarmac that was laid, because that was engineered by Shell,
yeah. The
tarmac. They put a whole load of it down there as an experiment. And then, from that point upwards, it's only been patched. And past the Murray Motorcycle Museum, the road is collapsing there, but again, the railway bridge goes under. And this isn't going to be another case of they've put it off, and it's going to cost a phenomenal amount to repair that. They had to put a new bridge in the Kewegg. That was 2002.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to do a similar thing with the one at Santon.
Howard, this strikes me, and I've had a note in from Peter, who said, it sounds like they're waiting for something drastic to go wrong, and then they'll do something with it, because nobody wants to be the person who signs off on a mega million-pound programme of works if they don't have to. So he just said they'll wait until something collapses.
Well, signing off on mega million, you got two classic examples there. The promenade, which is collapsing now, it's a disgrace, that road. There's a piece of the red tarmac that's dropped about 6 inches just around about Clarence Terrace. And that is right alongside where the trams are running through. There's a myriad of places where that road is breaking up, so somebody signed it off. And we got that classic one in Liverpool where they're still having to work on it for 80 million. So if they'd have done something in the last 50 years, then they wouldn't have had this cost sitting over the head and getting higher
yeah. On
a daily basis.
I'll be honest, I didn't even know about this until it was raised yesterday by Steve, who called up and said it's ruining his suspension. And I mean, fair play to Michelle Hayward. She brought it up. She said it's going to have to be closed for 9 months, and everybody's going to have to go via the Braid or the Old Castletown Road, and it'll be the Braid, because you can't get HGVs around Kroger, so it'll have to be through the Braid. So 9 months to do it.
Well, that's on the way they work here. I went down the other day, Dan. There was two fellas from the highway board of the DOI. They were sitting in the wagons in a a farm lane. And I went down to Castletown, ran a couple of little jobs to do, and I come back again, and the two of them were still sat in that wagon in that same place. So, you know, they just got to get up and get that action done. They can lay roads in no time at all. They can rebuild roads. But here, the old saying, trade a lure, time enough. And that just does not work for arterial routes. It's structural damage to the roads and structural damage to vehicles.
Howard, when you were involved in this, the bit up to Brown Cow Hill and what have you, did they ever suggest reformatting the road? Because that chicane that goes all the way through is, you know, it's not cut out for big trucks, particularly going each way, is it?
No. Well, I don't know what the actual train of thought was within, as I say, it was the Highway Board then, but this is going up into the hierarchy. But I know on the ground that was turned down because of the railway bridge. It would have to be rebuilt. They must have known about that because it's stone. And that is also part of an arterial route for the steam trains.
Yeah, it is.
So would they have to shut the steam trains down for
that
six months?
Exactly my next thought, is that while this is happening for 9 months, will the steam railway be
functional
past Sandton, really? You'd really be going from Douglas to Port Sodric, and that's it if you couldn't get through.
Yep, exactly. Well, they can get to Sandton and turn. That's a mini station there that is a side and they can turn on. But it wouldn't give the same enthusiastic coverage by patrons because they've got the kitchen, the dining car, and that will trundle down slowly down to Ballasalla, Castletown, turn round and trundle back slowly. And that will be a business that will be greatly affected by this 9 months. And that's a long time when you're in business with no money coming in.
Okay. All right. How
going back to what Chris Robertshaw was saying there about the wage, for quite a number of years I was a shop steward, and this again has gone back to the 1970s when the unions, they rode carte blanche over all and sundry. They had power, and I'm sorry to say, but it's going back that way now. But we could go down, I was, as I say, one of two shop stewards, and we could go into the office and see the boss. We virtually put a price on the table, and because of the power of the unions at the time, that was more or less said, we're going to get a rise, and they're given a 10% rise now in this wage structure. The minute I walked out of that office, yes, we got a 10% rise for the number that worked within the company, but the boss put the price up of everything, which covered everybody on the island. So the whole island suffered for what was, in a sense, our greed.
Well, we'll see what happens with this. This minimum wage, I mean, Chris Robertshaw's point is, and the local economy forum point is, that it's a tax grab. The Treasury Minister says it's basically to put money in people's pockets. We won't know until the first payslip, though, Howard.
Well, as I say, the payslips, are these people going to get paid the full amount, which, as Chris Robertshaw just said, no, because the national insurance is going to go up. There's been no promises from our government that they're not going to raise national insurance for the workers. They'll probably slap a bit on the employees just for good luck. And then they'll come back on the tax and take it off them in both ways. So they've already got 14, 15 million more than they expected last year in this year's kitty. And as I say, I'm retired now quite a long time, and I'm still paying tax. So, you know, they put my tax up by 2% 2 years ago, dropped it down a bit, still 1% above average, and I'm still paying that, although it's not on my state pension.
But, well, this is a message for anybody who's listening off the Isle of Man who thinks we're a low tax jurisdiction then, Howard.
Well, it's lower tax, yes. but it's not as low as what they're broadcasting and boasting it to be.
Okay. All right, Howard, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Take care. Bye now.
Good to hear from you. So what do you think about the situation at the Sandton Railway Bridge and what Michelle Haywood was talking about yesterday? It was a bit of a surprise when that came up yesterday. A bit of a surprise. Anyway, the Treasury Minister says that the government isn't going back on a Timbal decision to increase the minimum wage. This is the local economy forum who discussed the impending minimum wage increase and basically said that they accuse it of being a tax grab. The Treasury Minister, Dr. Anderson, he was there at the meeting as well, and he said the minimum wage level was set in Tynwald, and basically that's that.
Well, I came along as a mark of respect, really, for the amount of small businesses who are here, and absolutely take on some of their concerns. That's what government needs to do. We have been doing that throughout the process. I'm sorry they don't feel that they've been listened to, but we've gone through a long process since 2021 in terms of trying to bring the minimum wage up to the level of the living wage, and now what we need to do is try to allay some of the fears that were expressed at the meeting today. Work with local businesses to make sure that we, as lots of people have said, can move forward together, but make absolutely certain that we improve the low pay for those workers on the Isle of Man who need a decent standard of living.
The question was put to you, can the 1346 be brought down? Can it be changed?
Well, this was something voted on by the vast majority of people in Tynwald. It goes along with the Isle of Man plan. We live in a democracy, and I think it's absolutely right that we respect the will of Tynwald in terms of what we passed in the October session.
That's the Treasury Minister, Dr. Allenton. Just going back to this Mersey Internal Audit Agency, you've reported on the health and social care model on the Isle of Man. They say it's not operating as well as originally intended. So here is the Tim O'Neill. Tim O'Neill is the Department of Health and Social Care's interim chief officer. This is what Tim O'Neill has to say.
My reading of the report, it's obviously an independent report, is that the do nothing, given the strength of the recommendations in the rest of the report, would be an odd recommendation to move forward with. But it's a member decision, that's not mine. And then there's a line in the report which describes pretty clearly there's very little interest in moving back to a fully integrated model, back into reintegration into government.
The two preferred ones, so fully implementing the Sir Jonathan Michael report, why has it not been fully implemented already? Is it been half done? Is it not working? Why is that now an option on the table?
I think it's a stopping off point. I think it's 4.5 years since we started. It's the right time to review and have a look at it. The motions very helpful to push us in that direction, and any governance structure with this kind of complexity, I think it's right to look at it externally and have a look at what's working and what could be improved, and I think the report makes some clear recommendations.
And then in terms of making that partnership closer, does that not kind of undermine the original idea of separating out the two?
Not necessarily. There's lots of different ways to implement an arm's length arrangement. I think that the report makes that pretty clear. From my point of view as the chief officer interim, it's about coming up with the right set of arrangements that are right for this island. So it's helpful that we can look at more bespoke ways of doing things to achieve that.
Time and time again we hear Manx Care's not working. It is an option there. I know it's not the preferred option, but at what point is government going to have to think about putting its hands up and say it's not working, we need to scrap it?
I think for me, my reading of it is about the model of delivery. So there'll be hard choices. There always are. There always will be. And I think, again, this report helps us just to amplify some of those. I think the model is secondary to the hard choices we need to make. But also, let's make sure we spend the money we have got incredibly wisely.
And I mean, money's the question. So the idea here that this report is going to go before Tynwald at the tail end of this year with the aim of reporting back in February, obviously February being budget month. I mean, how is that all going to factor in?
We're going to be busy. I think the logic of bringing all that together is a sound one. You know, my officers know that's going to be much of their time spent doing that over the next 2 or 3 months, working really closely with Manx Care. As I said before, bringing the budget, the strategy and the longer term plan together in one conversation seems to make sense to me.
Well, that was Tim O'Neill, and he's the interim chief officer at the DHSC. So four recommendations, four options, but two of them they're not considering: doing nothing or scrapping Manx Care completely. So, well, do you got any thoughts on this? We'll be finding more out about this as the day goes on. It's certainly a hot topic. And Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. There's a new lake in Port Erin, Andy.
Oh, whereabouts?
Well, where the new pedestrian crossing on Ballyfesson Road opposite the new camping site is quite impressive. People are driving on the other side of the road to go around it on the wrong side of the pedestrian crossing. So I don't know. We'll have to name this lake because it's every time it rains any meaningful quantities, it's quite a few inches. So
doesn't it drain at all? Then doesn't it drain?
Well, it takes a few days. I mean, if it rains for much longer, they'll be issuing fishing licences there, I think.
Anyway, that wasn't why you called.
Yeah. A couple of interesting statements from the DOI minister, Michelle Hayward, yesterday. She said it's ridiculous for a minister or political member of the department to get involved in appointments at the airport. But when I suggested a public meeting with the chief officer of the DOI, Emily Curfee, who the minister said has full accountability for those appointments, the DOI minister replied, and I quote, "Absolutely not. I think that's absolutely not going to happen under my watch." So that's kind of 180 degrees, isn't it? She's sort of doing a hands-off approach, but at the same time, she's saying that it's not going to be allowed to have a public meeting with the CO of the DOI, Emily Curfee.
Well, I think
the
point she made was that the airport's run by a board, and the board are responsible for running the airport, whereas Emily Curfee is the chief officer of the DOI. It'll go across her desk. The board runs the airport.
Right, but I also suggested Jeff Pugh, who's the interim airport manager, and I distinctly remember talking to the previous airport manager, Gary Cobb, on the Man in Line, and at a public meeting in Jerby, talking about a new airport up there. And I seem to remember many times that the CEO of Manx Care, Teresa Cope, has been on your programme and has been at many public meetings that I've actually spoken to her. Similarly, the MUA, the CEO of the MUA, Phil King, has attended many public meetings. So why all of a sudden is it that the DOI chief officer is not allowed to have public communications, especially something as important as the security at the airport?
Well, that's something we'll have to leave up in the air. I mean, what would you hope to get out of a public meeting? I mean, what's the pressing issue with the airport, do you think?
Well, you know, it would be nice to know why it's been under special attention status for 6 years. It would also be just nice to talk to the person who the minister yesterday said has full accountability for the hires there. So at least you could get some clarity as to why it is that these aircraft are floating around in the sky for half an hour because ATC aren't available. I mean, you know, one of those Airbuses uses a car tank full of fuel every minute that it's up there. So if we're talking about all this green agenda, why is that okay? It just makes me wonder, why is there this kind of stonewalling when it comes to hearing what's going on there? Because it's, you know, it's from what I remember, the ATC bit is a kind of a recent addition to the special attention. The original special attention thing was to do with procedures, to do with things like low visibility, emergency preparedness and stuff like that. So it's not just about ATCs being there to handle aircraft that are inbound or outbound, and you don't really want to be floating up in the sky for any longer than you really have to. However, not everything is lost, Andy. She will spring into action after Ollie texted in yesterday about chewing gum outside on the pavement. So apparently she's going to contact the board immediately about that one. So at least the chewing gum will be sorted out outside the airport.
Well, that may seem flippant, but to lots of people, I mean, to see the insides of somebody's stomach spat out onto the pavement, that's public image, isn't it? I mean, really. And so, I mean, she obviously cares about the public image. It's the first thing you see when you walk out of the doors, well, apart from the cigarettes. So, good luck that she's doing something about that.
Well, yes, that's true. But, I mean, you know, security in the air making sure that there's air traffic control, because you know very well, if one aircraft gets significantly delayed or diverted, it has a knock-on effect that can mess with our business, it'll mess with families, it'll mess... I mean, imagine, you know, Christmas time or something and you have these issues when there's lots of people moving around.
Well, that's the whole point about the last flight being diverted, in that with for either Loganair or for certainly EasyJet, it comes at the end of that. That plane may have done 8 legs in the daytime, and if it picks up 10 minutes delay on each one, it's going to be late coming to the Isle of Man in the evening. And that's where the problem lies. It's the late flight in from Gatwick and the late EasyJet back to Gatwick. That's always the problem.
But I kind of see a parallel here. You know, we're talking about, yes, we'll immediately sort out the chewing gum, but ATCs could let the planes float around for half an hour. And the parallel is with, well, we're going to put some 20-mile-an-hour signs up that nobody wants, but we're going to let the road fall apart by the brown cow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, let's deal with the real problems at hand here at the moment.
Well, I see your point. It's just that chewing gum is far easier to sort out than air traffic control, isn't it?
Well, there you go, you know. I mean, 50 years, Howard was saying, since something meaningful was done around that area. And, you know, this is affecting transport in all kinds of different ways.
Well, the airport, and, you know, the airport affects our public image and our business image. And next Monday, Tim Johnston from the Department of Enterprise is on. The minister is on with his chief officer. And they're the people who try and get people in to do business. They're the ones who are attracting businesses to generate growth, to generate income and to bring new jobs. And if business executives can't get to the Isle of Man on the last EasyJet from Gatwick, that surely will be a problem. So that's certainly something that we'll put to him.
And I think to remember, I think he was part of the conversation last year on that Hansard about why the actual proper overarching oversight of civil aviation, the International Civil Aviation Organization, hasn't done a full audit of all the procedures and the safety of the airport here in 16 years. I mean, the CAA in the UK was mentioned yesterday, but, you know, you really want to have proper certification, which is why we're on special attention. So we need to get that special attention off us, because, I mean, I think a couple of years ago, it even went the next notch up, which was on notice, which is just, you know, it's not far away from shutting the airport down. So let's hope that that doesn't happen, because that's... you know, that would be a bit of a catastrophe. It would be a catastrophe if the airport was to close because, you know, things weren't getting sorted out. But, I mean, 6 years to be on a special notice over here, special measures, it's an awful long time to not get this sorted out, isn't it, Andy?
OK, all right. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling today, Julian.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
21 minutes before one, although Michelle Haywood did say yesterday was at great pains to say that the airport is completely safe. Everything, there are margins built into all this. It's just that it's fair to say the airport isn't what it used to be. We used to fly and have flights from many other destinations. The airport used to look a lot trimmer. Hey, there used to be a time when you could go into arrivals and actually see people arriving before they sold all the advertising and put vinyl stickers up over everywhere. Relatives used to be able to see relatives arriving. Business colleagues could see business colleagues arriving. It's quite quaint. It's quite fun. But I think for the best part of £30,000-£35,000, those views and those greetings are no longer with us. If you want to find out more, by the way, you can see the airport leadership team and the management. All you need to do is to go to airport.im and you can click on Meet the Team, and they're all there. Jeff Pugh, the interim airport director, Matt Shaw, the operations director, Melissa Rundle, head of safety, compliance and quality assurance, and Hannah Labau, the commercial director. They're all there. So that's the team that runs the airport. And let's go to Bonzo with us now. Hi, Bonzo. Hi, Bonzo.
The airport.
Oh, sorry, Bonzo.
Hello?
You're with us now. Sorry, we had a gremlin there.
Oh, right. Well, yes. You know, we've got low cloud over Port St Mary at the moment, so, you know, the satellite signal might be having a problem.
Jolly good.
Anyway, yes, the airport. Listening to Julian, yes, I think there's a few things that he misses there, and I think certainly... sort of dismissing the idea of removing chewing gum from outside of the airport as somehow minor and why aren't we doing X, Y, and Z when, oh, but Michelle Hayward can easily order the, you know, the removal of chewing gum. Well, that's something she can do. Doing these other things overnight, as we've seen, because they are still in progress some years later. Of course, we've had COVID and such. Well, that just shows. But I'm with the Singaporeans on chewing gum. If I remember rightly, in Singapore, you're either massively fined or you're even jailed for dropping chewing gum, which, you know, I must admit, although our prison is full, I'd pretty much support. And as a consequence, Singapore's metro and other public transport and pavements do not have chewing gum on them. But that's by the by. When it comes to the airport, of course, the problems that we have at the end of the day and at the start of the day are because, of course, we are no longer an airline base. So the aircraft are not there first thing in the morning and not there last thing at night. And whilst we have a provision whereby we're a bus stop, essentially, on various legs before they then return to base, I can't see a way that we will ever avoid being affected by that problem.
I mean, when was the last time it went? Was it when British Midland disappeared, wasn't it? Because they used to keep some of their planes here.
BA City Express had a base here. Then Flybe had a base here.
That was it, Flybe, yeah.
But then Flybe was sort of outsourced to Stobart, and Stobart I don't think kept a base here, although I may be wrong.
How do we get airlines back, because we have open skies? Is open skies the problem?
Yes, I think open skies is the problem, but then again, of course, if you don't have open skies, then you're probably going to have higher fares. So it's, you know, swings and roundabouts. But I think everyone agrees that they would be perhaps willing to pay a bit more to be able to be sure that they actually get away in the morning or get back in the evening, rather than having to spend, you know, a day or two actually sort of trying to make their own arrangements to find alternative transport or to actually stay where they are. Of course, there was, if I remember rightly, an opportunity for the government to actually buy Manx Airlines, which they turned down many, many, many years ago. And as has often been mentioned on the programme, yes, Manx Airlines, you know, was a quality airline. Price was not its, not its key thing. It could be at short notice quite pricey, but at least you knew that it was going to operate, and it had the kind of pilots. Okay, which you don't have so many of nowadays, but old Royal Air Force bush pilots who were used to landing their Andovers and their Hercules and in all sorts of strange conditions, and we're able to fly into here. Another thing about the Air Force is, of course, the Air Force used to be a training pipeline for air traffic controllers, but now, of course, you have far fewer flying stations in the Royal Air Force, and so their requirement for controllers is far lower.
Okay.
And so you don't have those people then sort of coming in after doing sort of six or seven years as a corporal or the sergeant, as a sort of assistant ATCO at a flying station, and then coming into the CAA. So we, like everyone else, are trying to recruit a very small pool.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it, Bonzo. Thanks for calling today. It's, 1:45 now.
Find a hidden gem in the Isle of Man, the Abbey Restaurant Balasala. This old country house offers a relaxed and sophisticated atmosphere where you can wind down with unique and interesting fresh food and drinks, from dinner with fine wines to tea and exquisite cakes. Enjoy our fantastic lunch menu with fresh specials, or join us for afternoon tea and dinner. To book, click the abbey.im, find the Abbey on Facebook, or call 822-393.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties. Diabetes Isle of Man exists to support everyone living with or affected by diabetes, including parents, carers, family members, and friends of those living with the condition. You can follow us on all social media channels at Diabetes IOM. Or if you can help, please visit diabetesisleofman.com to find out more. This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years, to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
Flu season is here, but never fear. So is the chance to protect yourself. Whether you qualify for a free NHS flu jab or would like a private vaccination for just £20, Kingsley Mooty has made it quick and easy to get protected. Visit Kingsley Mooty on Facebook or call 625040. Get your flu jab today with Kingsley Mooty.
It's nearly time to fly away with Manx Radio's The Boarding Pass. All next week, we're giving you the chance to win two tickets to see the hilarious Ricky Gervais at the M&S Bank Arena in Liverpool on Thursday, the 4th of December, with an overnight stay and return flights all included. To enter, play our Guess the Liverpool Landmark competition. Listen for a clue to a famous Liverpool landmark every day and text us your answer to enter. All correct answers go into the draw to win the grand prize. The Boarding Pass with EasyJet, M&S Bank Arena and Novotel Liverpool Paddington Village. Supported by Clinic Savoir, open now in Ramsey. Expert care with integrity.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Got a message in, a text in, 538 from Tony, said, let's make it simple. One airport, shambles. One meat plant, shambles. Actually, meat plant is a shambles. It's a word for a slaughterhouse, isn't it? Shambles. One hospital, shambles. One boat service, shambles. We used to be a proud island, says Tony. Here's another Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, after that, I don't know what to say, because that's basically what I'm trying to say, is that we have a disaster that nobody seems to want to grasp. Yesterday we heard the lead person, political lead, for DOI tell us, oh, there's a terrible road, I know it's there, everything's being done that we can, but we can't do anything because we'd have to close the road for 9 months. So my question would be, if you have to close a road for 9 months, and you know you've got to do that, why don't you go ahead and put a temporary single-track road in, one way, from somewhere along that line, to bypass, you know what one of those is, where you don't actually drive the road, bypass the problematic bit while it's repaired. That would be what they would do in most places in the world. So my question is, why is it that we can't do that? Or why is it we don't even think about doing that? Is it because the DOI is too focused on doing things like 20-mile-an-hour limits rather than actually fixing roads? So in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, we need to have a clear root and branch change, and that includes breaking up the gigantic DOI megalopolis that doesn't do anything physically other than make a mess of most things. And you could just list all those out. You heard somebody this morning, I can't remember who it was, that was talking about it, the PROM, which Michelle Haywood said was all finished, which is not finished because it's now breaking up and falling apart. And she wants to add in Railway Terrace to extend in the lines. So you now delayed the whole thing again for another 2-3 years while the efficient department works out what they're going to do about that and puts together a business case. So she then glossed over the fact that there was a business case put forward, the line was supposed to go through, and in 1 minute it's, we have to do what they say from Tynwald, and the next minute is, well, we spent the money somewhere else. And we don't know where it was, where it's spent. But we're looking into it. This is 3 years, 4 years down the road. And they'll keep looking into it because they don't do anything. So it's clear to me, and maybe only me, that the department is too big, too cumbersome, and not being held to account by anybody. So they're just doing what they want.
So you think that the DOI should be broken up?
Yeah, why not? You know, take a step back, Andy. Before the days of DOI, we had different people looking after different things. Now, I don't want to go backwards. I just want to make everything more efficient. So the question is it more efficient now than it was 25 years ago, when we could actually say, get that road fixed, and it will get fixed? And that was under a department that was just for roads. I believe it was just roads.
Oh, you know,
I remember all the...
You know what would happen if the DOI got broken up, Tony? There'd be a report. There'd be a consultant, wouldn't there? We'd be there for
two... No, it doesn't need to...
We'd be there for 2 years.
You don't need to have a consultant. You just need to do it. That's what's wrong with all of the government today. Everything, we have to go to somebody else and ask them what to do, because we really don't know what we're doing. I mean, it comes back to the Treasury. Oh, we've brought this in, it's a good idea, great. But we didn't think about all the implications of it. So why did you bring it in without doing that? That's part of normal business practice. And this is all down to having amateurs who are not professionals in business running the country. And that's the problem we have. If you go back to when we had absolutely professional people, people who were aware of the implications of things, we didn't have all these problems. And they all of them want to do what they want to do. Laurie Hooper decides we should control the local authorities because I don't like what they do. So we'll go ahead and stick this extra clause in, and then everybody just waves it through, which is what the government does. You know, it's got to stop. It has to, because otherwise we're going to carry on down this road, and in 5 years' time we'll still have the same problems, but they'll be worse.
Okay. All right, Tony, we've got to go. We're almost out of time. Thanks for being there
today. You take care, Andy, and keep your feet dry, because otherwise you'll get web feet.
Thanks for calling.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free, and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Quay, Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
A big thank you to your workmen. They've done a very good job. My property looks like new again. Thank you, EPS.
We're delighted with the house. Your employees obviously take great pride in their work.
It was done promptly, professionally, and considerately.
EPS, transforming properties island-wide with the revolutionary Protex wall covering system. Guaranteed for 10 years. Call 627191 and book now for spring and get 10% off.
A good job. Well done.
You've worked hard all morning in IT, doing computery things, or in retail, assisting ungrateful customers, or doing whatever it is you lovely people do. But now, it's lunchtime, and you, my friend, deserve something special from Smash and Fry. Take your lunch to a new level with our delicious pizzas, fried chicken, smash burgers, and milkshakes. Lunchtime is your time. Visit Smash and Fry, Duke Street, Douglas. You deserve it.
November is Will Writing Month, and Callan Wild has teamed up with Sight Matters to make a real difference. In November, you can have your will professionally written at a reduced rate, with a single will £200 plus VAT and a joint will £300 plus VAT, with £100 going directly to support the work of Sight Matters. It's a simple way to plan for the future while helping others today. Call Callan Wild on 623 195 and claim your will writing with Sight Matters.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Geraldine dropped a note in just to say, who's going to sort out the taxis at the airport? Oh, cracky. Don't get started on that again. Jerry also said, I hate those adverts in the arrivals hall. Whose idea? Well, apparently they earn us money, or they earn the airport money. How much has the debate over the bishop cost in MHK's and MLC's time and salary, as I wonder, says David. The new minimum wage was a done deal before anyone had the chance to object or even discuss it, texter 753. I closed the shop at 11 for 2 minutes silence. Did anyone heed it? Cars and pedestrians just carried on, says Chris in Port Erin. You couldn't hear the start, Maroon, because there's a helicopter over the village. Stick around, Christy's on the way. It's National Diabetes, World Diabetes Day on Friday. Talking about diabetes, Isle of Man, and some tickets for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang at the Gaiety. Thanks to Chris on the phone.
W-I-N-T.